of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes of March 2nd? I'm hearing none, they'll stand as printed. Anyone in the public, Joe?
Good morning.
Anything you want to talk about? Not on the agenda?
I think it's on the agenda.
Yeah, okay. Item next, Sharon, financial report.
Oh, all right. So this is going to be really brief.
Good.
So as of the end of April, we have $1,545,000 and $254 in the accounts. We've earned 98% of the income, as you can see on the income and expense statement, and we've spent 21% of our expenses, and that's for a quarter of the year, right, has gone through. No, a third of the year has gone through, 4 months. So the only expense I noticed that I wanted to call attention to was we hadn't planned to buy, we bought 52 single transmitters for $8,000, $8,778. These are for the new infrastructure project, but it wasn't a routine thing that we do, we pay every month. And I think that's it. If anyone has questions, and I can do better if you guys, unless you want to be treasurer. All right.
Any questions or comments? The financial report. Thank you. Item B.
Okay, you all have the charts. I had to put in February, March, and April charts because I didn't get the February one in the last meeting. But as you could see on the usage, we're using more water this year for the first 3 months. 4 months. Sorry. I think some of it was from the winter. We had some freeze-ups in February. Some came from the construction breaks. We had some of those, but not a ton of that. I'm still seeing more usage, normal usage. Not normal, but, you know, people use water. Seems to be higher this year. I'm not too sure about why, but it could be that people are, they know we had a lot of water this winter and maybe they're just kind of relaxing on their conservation. We could have more people up here. Just some years we have more. So I think we just have to keep the conservation in front of them. We're going to add more meters. We've already added 150 more meters. We have, I think, Carissa, about 819 meters now. And as people get meters, they hopefully will be more aware of their usage, the water people are using. They'll keep an eye on that, and we may see some reduction there. We're still doing real well. I mean, compared to past years. We used to use 2013 was 56 million for the entire year. We're not, you know, it's hard to tell. We'll just have to watch, see how it goes. Production, we're buying a little bit more water from CCWD than we're making right now, but that's not unusual for the beginning of the year. It should level out and be more 50-50. For that.
Hey, Dave, I don't know why, but it seems like you're breaking up a lot.
Can we turn our volume up, maybe?
I'll turn up the... How about that? Does that sound better?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, the production, yeah, we're buying in some more water from CCWD than we are are making. That's usually it's about 50-50, but it's not terrible. We'll keep an eye on that. The drawdown, wells drawdown, well 3 is a little, few feet below what it was last year in the height of water above the pump. That's how we measure our how much water we have available to pump. But that's not unusual because we pumped more water the first 4 months. And it's really up there. I mean, the maximum for well 3 is probably about 170 feet. So we're still looking good there. Well 4, 772 feet in April. Maximum is about 780. So we're up, way up there on well 4. It recovers quickly, so we're not worried about either of the wells. This month we should be replacing well 3's pump, motor, pipe, and wire. We're going to put all new parts. The well is still operating, but it's about the end of its useful life. We had our engineers, Ludorf and Scalmanini, tested it last winter, and they recommend that we replace it before it blows up.
Replace the well or the...
It's the pump, motor. The well's staying there, but we're just going to put a new pump and motor down it. That way, we don't want to be, you know, in July and all of a sudden it goes out. We don't want that, so we're...
Is it being replaced right now?
And they are due within the next 3 weeks, they'll be out.
Now, is that in the budget?
Mm-hmm. Any questions on that, on our usage? Production drawdown.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of the reserves that is in the budget, but is that pre-planned in terms of funding and reserves?
No. We planned that in the budget ahead of it. We didn't put any in. We don't have a reserve. We just have an emergency reserve right now. So our asset management plan, which Tom will be talking about more of in detail on later. That's an issue that's going to come up with that. How much do we put in reserves for things like that, and how much can we plan for in our regular budget? You know, because of operation maintenance, stuff like that. So anyway, so we good with that? Okay, the next thing is the project report. We're doing real, real well on the project. It started out slow because the winter was impacting it, but we have water mains installed on Russell Drive, David Lee, all of Moran, where they're going to put water main. They're not going to put it on one section of Moran because we already have a main in there, and we're going to use that main for instead of putting new pipe in. We're going to use the main that was put in the 90s, so it's still fairly new. We're going to use that one, and so all that water main has been put in. Dean Way, Marilyn, Don, Helen, all the services, water services and hydrants are put in on Russell Drive and David Lee Road. Now we're installing, Mazingo is installing services on Deanway, and they are planning, Mazingo, to bore as many services as they can rather than digging them out of the banks and replacing them with what they have to do is put slurry and cement for the erosion. So I think it's a better thing to do to bore it so you don't have that erosion problem. They're working on that, trying to do that. Hopefully we can do a lot of them. Some of them you're going to have to dig.
How about Maryland? There's a lot of work in Maryland, wasn't there?
Yeah, they put the entire main in on Maryland. They have to go back. Services Well, like I say, you know, they're going to try and bore some of them. Services have to be put in, hydrants have to be put in, and air reliefs.
Right.
So the little parts still have to go in.
At the annual meeting, Jeff, I'm going to mention, I'm going to ask you to mention that you would talk to your insurance carrier now that you had a hydrant in the neighborhood and what the reaction was.
Okay.
Because what I'm hearing is quite the opposite. And generally those are from people that don't have the facts.
Happy to do that. Just, you know, an aside to your report, we came home, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, 8 o'clock at night, no water. And so I called the emergency number, got a recording, and said I would hear a response within 15 minutes. I'm watching the clock, right? 8 minutes later, the phone rings, it's Tyler. Wants to know what's going on. I said, we don't have any water. He said, well, we were putting meters in today, and maybe they didn't turn the cork stop back on. And he was out in 10 minutes and came up and told me the water was on. And I told him then that I was on the board. And he said, well, you know, I said, did you get a bunch of calls? And he said, nope, you were the only one that didn't get turned back on. And I said, well, that's good, isn't it? I mean, it's good that it happened to me and not somebody else. So my message is that the system worked perfectly.
Yeah. Well, Mark on the phone there, it happened to him too, so that's the second board member. I don't know why.
They're only good.
Maybe it was intentional.
So what's the story about the hydrants, Bob?
The number two reason that insurance companies are pulling out of this neighborhood up here is there aren't enough, or you don't live close enough to a hydrant. The number one reason is because they're losing their tail over the fires in
right.
California. I'll take Jeff's story here that he just casually calls his insurance company and says, by the way, I now have a hydrant. And his insurance went down.
And it hit, and we got our new bill, and it went up 10% from last year. You know, and I've heard stories about policies doubling and tripling.
Oh, yeah.
And having to go to brokers, and this is State Farm, so it's not
or with State Farm as well.
Have you had any issues?
Mm-hmm. No, we renewed in January and there was no problem.
A little increase that expected, right? I mean, you know,
probably. I don't recall.
It was 9.99%. It was, you know.
Yeah. So they say it was less than 10.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dave.
Okay. The retros, which are the rehabbing. Jeff just talked about rehabbing the boxes, making them all consistent, all the same. Some of the other projects we had in our previous projects, the service boxes were different. Every time we did one, we weren't consistent with that. So with this job, we were going in and rehabbing all the boxes, making them all the same, putting in brass parts rather than plastic parts, stronger. And also putting a regulator in, a pressure regulator for the homeowner to make sure they all had one. It's always good to have one. And the homeowner will be responsible for that. We're giving it to them, and from now on, we would like to be out of the regulator business because it's really not where we should be. The meters were installed. We had all the retros are done. 417 meters were put in. Not all are activated yet. Our guys are coming along with their instruments and activating them, giving them to Carissa, and she's putting them into our software, Black Mountain, our billing, And so those people, anyone that has a meter and it's activated, will start getting billed for water use. And that is going to continue on through the project as services are installed and meters will be installed. Our guys will come along. I think we're installing those. And they'll come along and activate them. And we'll be adding people all the time until we're totally 100% metered, which is great, I think.
Now, with the addition of the 400 and some odd against the total, is that about half of what we have? Or
with the 400, it'll be half, because right now it's 819. We have 1,708 connections, so it's a little less than half there, but we're getting there.
So Dave, going back to your comment about boring, is that under people's driveways? Is that what?
No, I wish. Well, we kind of wish, because we used to do that. But it was this a backhoe with a auger. It's slow. The thing would break a lot. It was, not preferable to modern construction. I asked them about it, but we have a picture in there. It shows the gigantic auger, and it's awkward. And so
where is that going to be used?
Well, we're not going to use that. For a water service, you only need a 1-inch pipe. It's a 1-inch flexible tubing. It'll attach it to a thumper, which is a pneumatic. It's a long shaft with a little hammer inside. And a pneumatic hammer bangs inside and it pushes it ahead. So they dig a hole and then they set this thing and they aim it up to wherever they want the services. And they fire it up, and sometimes you have problems, you hit a rock, it won't go, so they have to dig it.
Is it that Ditchwitch machine that's in
the Ditchwitch is their potholing machine.
Okay.
That thing, it's a vac trailer. So they squirt water at high pressure into the ground and suck it out at the same time so they can take the dirt out. It's way better than trying to dig with a backhoe and hit. It's much more safe. But they're still breaking pipes. I wish I would have, I wanted to bring one in.
Back to Andy's question, what are you boring?
Okay, we're attaching to the new main with this 1-inch tubing, and we're going to bore under the road rather than digging it. These are for the cross services that are across the road. The ones that are on the
pipe side. So there's no cutting and patching.
There's no compact. You have to compact it. And then you have to pave it. So if they can bore them in a reasonable amount of time, it really saves money doing that, because you don't have to go back, have compaction tests done on the thing, pave it, and it's better especially on these high banks. And we've done it in the past. You put a new service, because the pins are a lot of times up right up there. They're not down here on the road, so you want to put your service right up by near the pin. So you do the boring and you avoid all this bank erosion. I think if I was a guy that lived in Blue Lakes, I wouldn't want to see a bunch of slurry stripes going down my street. So anyway, so it's a good deal. I hope it works. It's got to be done in the amount of time they need to finish the project. If it's the crew is just learning it and starting it, so I think as they go along, they're going to get faster.
So this is a subcontractor to Mazingo, or Mazingo's
them.
Doing it themselves?
It's them.
A rental piece of equipment?
They may have their own. That's theirs. It's really fairly simple. It's a compressor with a pipe and this shaft with a thing in it, and you just aim it and go.
Right.
So we'll see how that works.
Really too bad they can't do something like that under people's driveways, because the patch job that I'm seeing is...
Well, it's temporary. They're going to come back and pave again. A much, much more professional paving. I've heard that from Jimmy Cook got me, and he goes, I see all that paving and I don't like it. It's not good. And I go, well, it's not. It's only temporary. Yeah. If you go up on Russell and take a drive there, you'll see. That's the permanent one. And you can check that out. And it's much better. Let's see, where are we at? Like I say, the services regulators, hydrants have to be installed on a lot of it. We have 6 new hydrants up on Russell and David Lee area. 4 of those are active because they're attached to the CCWD pipe. The other 2 are on our pipe, which hasn't been activated yet. But that has to be done to finish out the main zone. Now, they have overlapped. They've gone out past the main zone there in Maryland. Helen, Don, they put all the pipe in on Moran, the main pipe. So they've kind of stretched out away from the main zone, but their goal is to finish the main zone area, which is Russell Drive, Dean Way, Kewen, Linda going up, and Moran, parts of that. So when they get that in, except for Blue Lake Springs Drive, it's, as you know, by across from the lodge, it's soaking wet, it's water's pouring out. So we're gonna leave that one off. But the rest of the main zone, they plan on doing. I'm hoping, and this is just a guess from their superintendent says by mid-June they should have that thing ready to go. Then everyone will have 6 months to connect to their new water box.
And how many of those are we talking about?
What do you think? Main zone was like 150? 200?
Yeah.
Somewhere in there. So we want to continue to do the plan, which is to connect or to get one area on so we can get these people hooked up and getting going so we're not waiting, you know, like doing a piece here and a piece there and not completing anything. We're trying to get the main area, the first one done, and then another area done, which will be down over over on like Patricia area back in there. Patricia, Gertrude.
Show the board on the map.
Oh.
The area you're talking about.
Yeah. So this is the main zone here. Everything but Blue Lake Springs Drive will be turning on. That'll be the first one. They're working down here now. They've gone all the way. This is the end of Blue Lakes for us. All the other pipes are. This is Moran here. So they put all the pipe in here, all the way up to Rainy, which is where it stops. And then our pipe is in here, by Sharon's house, actually. Down there, it goes from Blue Lake Springs Drive all the way to Rainy. So we're going to use that pipe that's already in the ground, so we're not putting any new pipe there. But we've got all the pipe from here to here, and all the pipe from here all the way up Moran all the way there. We got Linda in, so we're doing pretty good.
The pipe down there below Rainy is just on the surface. It hasn't been installed yet.
Right
on Rainy here. Or you mean Moran?
No, on Moran.
Moran.
Well, they've gone all, I was just out there, they put all this in, they've gone, I don't know how far they've got to Rainy, but they're close.
I thought they were really close the other
day.
They're close. They talked about they're almost to Rainy.
They're like 1,000, they put in 1,000, or 900 feet in one day, 900 feet. So they're almost there, if they haven't reached it. This would be done, then they're going to do over here, this is Annalee,
Diana, this is the plan, maybe parts of Patricia, so we'll probably do this area next. And anyway, we've been putting in this one, you know, wherever we need to here. So that's the idea. And then they'll be jumping over, of course, to this side, but the,
They're making good progress. And we're sticking to the plan because we want to have everybody starting to hook up as soon as they can. So the main regulators I forgot to add have to be added to before the zone is complete. And they're working on all that too on the main zone. They're going to start that. The pump house, they're working on that. They've taken the pump house building off, which was a little tricky because we were worried about the pipes under there inside. That building's been taken off. The electric panel that was there is taken out. And the next phase of that is going to be we have to shut those pipes off that are inside the pump house. Turn them off, isolate that house, then they're going to start tearing all the pipes out and building the new one. And the idea for that pump house is that we'll be able to pump water from tank 4. Might as well use the map again. Tank 4 here, which is up there, over to tank 6, which is right here. There's 6. This is the high tank, 75 pounds difference. So I don't know what the height. It's a little bit higher than tank 4. So we'll be able to pump water through the pump house, which is here. You know, down raining across through the pump house up to the. It'll go through the streets up to the tank. So that way we'll be able to move water around any way we need to. If we have major breaks or something in the future, I'm hoping with the new pipe we won't have a lot of water breaks just for a while, but in the future we have breaks somewhere. Our treatment plant is located in here. So if this was out of commission for whatever reason, we could take water from 4, which is CCWD water, pump it up here to fill this tank to keep everybody in water, which is a really good thing. So we plan to use the pump house a lot more than we thought, and we're looking at blending the water because the well water is getting more and more, as Mark pointed out to me. Mark Woltering and I talked about that. Mineral deposits, half our system's on well water, and we are not pumping our wells like we used to. You know, we're about pumping half what we used to pump. So I think that water sits in there, and the minerals, it absorbs more minerals. So people are complaining about their toilets, their sinks, their glasses, all that. You've probably seen it, Jeff, on yours.
When the water, I knew the water was coming back on, I opened the closest faucet on the sink. It purged in 15 seconds, and we had no issues with toilet, showers, or anything. Maybe a little educational thing to people, what to do, how to avoid that little bit of dirt that's going to get in the
system,
and also the whatever, I don't know, rust or whatever. So yeah,
we put out
shaken loose.
Chris has mailed out letters on that to advise people what to do.
Spoke over the phone.
Right. Yeah. But
yeah, you're talking about the.
I'm talking about the minerals.
The mineral content of the water.
Right.
Building up
and
calcium, stone, and.
And you haven't noticed much?
It's a natural stuff that's in the water. And if it sits in the toilet long enough, it'll break apart, and you actually get a ring inside the toilet.
Right.
From the
minerals. Yeah,
the only place that I know we've got a drippy faucet that drips into a sink, and there's that mineral
mm-hmm.
trail.
Yep.
from that slow drip over the years that...
Calcium and magnesium.
I got to write you down. You have a leak. You have to... I'll put you down a little bit. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, so there has been complaints about that. I don't know. Like Mark Waltering was talking about putting in, you know, water softeners, and that's okay, you know, to do, I think. We researched it a little bit. You know, how does that affect the septic tanks? There's varying opinions on that, but if we can do what I want us to be able to do, which is blend the water from the CCWD surface water, soft water, our well water is hard. If we can blend it, I think it will improve the, it'll be less mineral deposits in there. I think people will be happier. We're hoping to be able to do that, and the new pump house will make that possible. I'm not sure we can. We're going to have it analyzed and because of the there's corrosion problems.
No issue with blending of water?
We don't know yet. We're going to see about it, though.
No, in as far as the state is concerned, when it comes to...
No. Well, like I say, there are corrosion issues. We have to have a corrosion plan. If the water is too corrosive or aggressive, we have to adjust for that. So we may have to do some treatment changes. Don't know. But anyway, so that and the pump house is going to be important. More important than we originally thought, so it's going to cost more. We made the thing a little bit more sophisticated. We're taking the building out. We're taking the pipes out. Originally, we were just going to kind of use the same pad and everything, but it's the price has gotten bigger on that. But I think it'll be worth it. Issues with construction. We had some issues with compaction. The original pipes, and what they're doing is putting base rock on top of the pipe. They put the pipe in, they put base rock on. They go in and they whack the, they have to compact the rock to 95% of the outside dirt. And they were making compaction fine, then all of a sudden they start failing because they changed the procedure of how they did it, how they put it in. And that was pointed out at a meeting. They changed the procedure. Now they're passing compaction. So that was an issue we had, but it's being resolved pretty well right now. They're passing all their tests on that. And another issue we had is the Miwok Indians showed up one day and said, "We weren't notified that you're doing this project. And, you know, we needed to be notified because we have to go and take a look, see if we have any sensitive sites." So we, of course, I knew that we had done a environmental, we had hired a company to do it. Environmental, we did all the things we were supposed to. It turned out that the notification to the tribe, the wrong person or the, I'm not really sure what happened, but they... Our company notified, not our water company, but the company we hired to do the environmental had notified the tribe, but it didn't get to the person it was supposed to get to, so they didn't know, claim they didn't know about it. So we got the documentation from the company that they did notify people, so that issue's okay, but now they want the Indians, they want to inspect, they want to look at some sites out there on the project.
So what claim do the Miwok Indians have to this area? Aren't they over
there? They have, well, they have, they're in Calaveras County too. They, in fact, I don't know where they've all been up here, but they, you know, have sites, apparently. I don't know, Andrew can tell you more about it, but if they come on a job site, they can shut the thing down. They say, wasn't. We weren't notified. We need to look at sites. And so, anyway,
maybe we can get a casino
kind of sites?
There.
Burial sites?
Well, they're talking about, you know, it could be just some artifacts, some arrowheads.
Oh.
They just basically, what I was told, I'm not real familiar with this, but if they want to document, say there's some arrowheads they find, they want to maybe document that spot, they wouldn't necessarily tell us we can't put the pipe in that area. It's just document that. If, say, they found bones or something, well, that's all a different thing. So what they have to do is they come out for a week, and they look, when we were digging in these, they already identified sites. Our engineer took the guy out and showed him, here's where our project is, where do you want to look? They looked. They said, right here, here, here. So we marked it up on the map. I'm going to get an email that says, this is what we want to do. This is how much it's going to cost you. This is how many hours he's going to spend on it, and you got to pay. That's pretty much how it works. And so we're gonna do it.
It's reflective of a law that passed. Are you familiar with SB 52?
Yes.
Maybe I'll let you talk about it.
Yeah, and it's also typical of your permits that you're going to get from the county to do this work and all of that, that there will be some conditions in there for cultural observation and measures like that. So we can take a look at the permits and see what's required. But I was talking with Dave about this the other day. It is typical that something along these lines will happen when there's trenching activity. And as Dave said, it really depends on what the actual site involves, whether it's some sort of artifacts or cultural ground all the way to the other end of being a burial ground or something like that, which we don't know at this point, but the actual impact on the project depends highly on what the site actually is.
If there is anything.
If there is anything like that.
But
so they didn't do this back when the subdivision was being constructed.
Yeah, all our other projects, I wondered about that. Of course, I wasn't the manager when we did those other projects, but I don't recall any Indians.
Well, and as Bob mentioned, AB 52 and other environmental laws that have passed, AB 52 very recently, but that has involved more tribal input on these types of projects. AB 52 is a good example of a very recent law that has required this, so it may just not have been the law at that point.
It allows unmitigated access.
Wow.
And allows them to charge for their time.
Wow. That's a good deal.
Yeah.
So this, we're guessing this little venture probably costs around somewhere between $3,000 and $3,500.
I haven't got the email from the tribe yet, but that's where our estimate is.
It's the bad news.
So it's fine, you know, we have to do it. We'll do it. Yep. Those two issues came up, but basically the project's going pretty good. Smooth. Let's see.
So Dave, the question that I asked in the long range planning committee meeting last week about the percent completed?
Yeah, I when you asked that, I had to think, because it's not, you know, it's not being done like everything, like the pipe, the services, the hydrants, all being put in at once. So when I was thinking about that, so I went over it with the engineer. So what we came up with using the different factors, the 22% of the pipeline is in, but that's only that. The services and the rest of it, if you add the hydrant services, regulators that have been done to date, we came up with 16% of the entire project is done. Now that could vary a little bit, but I think it's pretty accurate.
Okay, so hold on to that number, because I think it's relevant to a future discussion that we'll have today.
Right, okay, so that's how it's going. I don't think I left.
The number was 15.
16. 16. So anything I leave out, Sharon?
No, I think you covered it all.
Okay. All right. So then the additional projects, Tom's going to talk about that a little more detail later, but our $12.2 million project originally didn't include some things that we feel that we need to do to make our system better, and so We have identified 19 additional projects. The bid from Zingo was low, so we felt we may have a chance to get them, some of them in under the 12.2 million. So we identified, we categorized them out into phase one, phase two, and phase three. Phase one, the highest priority that we feel that we really would like to have in there. And most of those are dealing with unit 13 area. That area is not going to get mains in the street. We are going to go in there because it already has them. We did do the retro work in there. So the water services are updated. We are going to replace the hydrants that are there.
That's part of this project.
That's part of this project. Yeah. But let's see, and we're doing the hydrants. But we started looking at Unit 13, even though it was the latest of all Blue Lake Springs construction. There's still some things in there we'd like to do to make it better. And most of that involves the fire flow. Because we are adding hydrants, or changing hydrants, but we'd like to put some more isolation valves in line to make it so that we don't have to shut the bigger portions of it off. We can isolate parts of it and work on that if we have a problem, instead of shutting the whole unit off, which we kind of do now. We have some regulators in there that don't work, and some of them are in various stages of opening and closing, and we want to take those out. The new model says we only need one, and that one we're going to replace with a brand new one, but the other ones we don't need, and they're restricting the flow. We want to make the fire flow as good as we can there. So there's some, those are in the phase one part of the project, additional. Also, we'd like to replace some pumping lines from the treatment plant up to tank. Well, the actual pipeline would go up to Del Rio Court around the back of Snowflake Drive up through there, and on Blue Lake Springs Drive down to the treatment plant. Those pipes are old, and they're important pipes. So even with our pump station in and complete, we'd prefer to have those pipes upgraded. So that's part of phase one, too. That's the most expensive part. But Tom will have all that broken down for you. But phase two are ones that we'd like to wait. We'll see how the money is and see if we want to do those. We'd like to do all of them, phase two and three too, but if we can't, that's okay. But we've identified those. So that's the where we are on additional projects. Right now, John Pedri, the engineer, has done some surveying. We've done some surveying on the line that goes from the treatment plant up to Del Rio Drive, because it goes behind the houses there. We have to know if we can fit that pipe in that spot, and it's pretty narrow, so we've done that. He has to make do some additional drawings for Mazingo to come up with a really good price on that. Jeff Graham, who was at our last annual meeting, but he's the guy that estimates. He says he needs a little bit more detail, which we're working on right now. Pedri's working on that, drawing those up. Okay. All right, that's the additional projects, and then Tom will be talking about that later. In fact, he's coming up next.
That it?
Any questions on the project? Additional projects?
Joe?
Yeah, can I have just a second on a place marker for something you mentioned with the blending? It's not part of the project as such, but it could be something that when we first start talking about you couldn't blend the two waters
right.
without doing some pretty complex reprocessing of the water. Is that something that would be a later on project to look at for some chemistry? Because the problem is that you're going to have variable blending. In some cases, you have more water here, more water there. So it may be a bigger project than you were kind of hinting at.
Yes.
So maybe a place marker somewhere that if you're going to do this, how much would that cost, and what kind of treatment plant changes would you have to make to do that?
Right. I think that could be, that should be part of our asset management plan. We may have to, like, we might have to keep the levels, keep the tank levels different than we do now, and pump maybe a certain amount of water in there from CCWD instead of maybe 50-50 or 25-75.
It looks like a project.
That's something that needs to be.
Maybe some money, maybe a place marker for a future day, because I think it's not a free thing to look at.
No, we're not just going to start doing it. I wouldn't do that because
you might have a problem with the precipitation of minerals,
Right? Yeah, so and also the corrosion too that I mentioned too.
Yes.
We have to have a certain pH level to keep it from the pipes from being eaten alive. All the little parts in the in the homes.
So that may not be a small project. Say.
Right. Right. I agree.
Especially if you have to do some modification to the
to the plant. Maybe, who knows? Yeah. But I would like to deal with this, the minerals. You know, if we can help with that, it'd be great. So that's my goal.
Jeff, you have your hand up.
Oh no. I was
just resting.
Sweating, flies.
Yeah.
It's a twitch, but I did have a question. When you talked about fire flows, do you have a set velocity that you don't exceed in the mains?
Well, that's the thing. See, it depends on what you have. If you have a house fire, you might have the fire department might hook up to one hydrant right by the house, near the house. If you're going to have a wildland fire and you have trucks stationed, which happened in at the old Gulch fire, a lot of you guys weren't around then, but we had fire trucks from all over the state were here, and they were stationed out there around Blue Lakes, around Meadowmont, and where the different places were. If you have more than one hydrant involved,
it can go.
You know, the ideal
5 feet.
Ideal flow is 1,500 gallons a minute if you can get it, but you open up another one, then that flow is going to start reducing as the more hydrants you open. So it just depends. We try it with a 6-inch pipe, you try and do your best to get the most.
Well, 6-inch pipe at 1,000 gallons a minute has a velocity of over 10 feet per second, which is, you know, when that water hits that valve at 10 feet per second, there's going to be consequences.
Right. But that's why the fire department has to be educated. They have to be careful when they open and close valves, and hydrants too, not valves, hydrants. So yeah, so right now, because of the restrictions in that line in 13, we'd just like to open it up more, get it to where the water can flow in times of need faster.
I want to go back to the question about the state's involvement on the blending of the water. It's not our intention to spend a lot of money to facilitate that, and then the state says, no, you can't do that.
No, they're not. They are more interested in the bacteria, you know, the health that in that way. The blending part or the corrosive part. We do have to have a corrosion plan, so that will have to satisfy them. But that's more of an aesthetic thing, the minerals. I mean, we could just keep it up. I mean, I don't know. I don't know, Jeff, if you know, but I read somewhere where about 80% of the country has mineral wells. I don't know if that's true, but 80% of the entire country, not count, doesn't count the cities, but a lot of people are on wells. A lot of people have the same problem of that, of minerals. And if we could do something about it, I think we should do it. But, you know, we're not going to get the state, we're not going to get in the way of them. We will comply with everything they want us to do.
Well, there's no indication that they would prohibit it.
Not unless it's people start getting sick. And that shouldn't happen with that, because it's all chlorinated, so.
Okay.
So the CCWD water that we get in, let's say, Section 3 today, that's not mixed at all with...
No, that's totally separate.
Totally separate.
Yeah, where you are, you get CCWD water, and Bob does. Mm-hmm. Jeff doesn't. Mark on the phone there, and he doesn't get it. He gets the well water, so. And they're totally separated right now.
I didn't notice any difference, Dave, too.
You didn't?
No.
Well, I get varying answers. You know, people complain some, and some say it's the best water they ever had, so.
The well water or CCWD water?
Well water.
Yeah, they're lying.
Yeah. I know. You had it up there, huh? Yeah.
I had it.
Right, so I want to...
I wouldn't make ice with it, that's all. I didn't like ice made with it.
Oh.
Any stuff in it.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
I'm trying. I want to get out of here by noon. 2 o'clock at the latest, right?
Can't go that far.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments? Item D, Tom? Schneider?
Hello?
Earth, yeah. Tom.
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah. That problem that I mentioned earlier has been intermittent. There's periods where all of the words are broken up, and right now it's working fine, but off and on it's been terrible. So hopefully you guys can hear me. Yeah. And
you're very clear.
If I have trouble hearing you, I'll let you know.
Can we mute us while he talks?
Mute us?
Yeah.
Can we?
I think I've done it. You turn off.
Be a red guy.
We're going to mute us while you talk. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, right. Here we go.
So, there's 6 topics that I'm going to cover today. First, talk about the USDA budget and interim loan status. The additional projects, I'll touch more on that from what Dave said. MC Engineering revised Amendment 5, asset management plan. We'll talk about the bi-monthly billing and payment process that's been brought up and requested. And then finally, the shareholder service line replacement loan program. So on page 21, we show there the same chart we showed in our last board meeting. The allocated USDA budget versus estimated cost. Our total budget is the $12.226 million. If you look at MC Engineering's costs, what I've shown there is their total project amount at $1.858 million. That includes Amendment 5 at the total request that they submitted in their revised Amendment 5 input at $74,361. And we'll talk more about that later, but we're recommending that that dollar amount be less. But that $74,361 is in this figure. For Mazingo, what's changed since the last time we looked at this is I've added in the 2 approved change orders for 2019, change orders 4 and 5, that amount to $35,000. So that brings Mazingo's subtotal up to 8.251. Nothing's changed in the next section. without the new project request, we've shown that the interest is estimated at $336 million. That's based on
a completion date of the end of March, and there's definitely room for discussion there based on the delays that we've been seeing so far due to the weather and so forth. If you remember back before we delayed the reimbursement of MC Engineering's cost and our Blue Lake Springs cost to the USDA project, we've delayed those reimbursements until January of next year. So the interest originally was $452,000. We got it down to the $336,000 by delaying those reimbursements. But anyway, the total costs are showing at $10.986 million. That's $1.24 million under the allocation. Based on the new additional scope requests, Dave mentioned that there's the three phases, and I'll get into those more later, but phase one would add 544,000 dollars in new project costs, and that would increase the interest by 61,000. If we went ahead with phases one and two, that would increase project costs by 747,000, and it would increase the interest by 115,000. If we approved and went forward with all three phases, the additional project costs would be 877,000 and interest 162,000. So you can see the totals there based on those additions and what the total would be compared to our allocation. So with phase one included, we would be within 635K of our allocation. If two phases were approved and performed, then we would be within 378K of our allocation. And if all three phases were included, we'd be only about 200K within our allocation. So it gets pretty tight there. The next page, I just included copies of the two Mazingo change orders that have been approved for this year, just for information purposes. The first one was $11,195, adjusting hydrant elevations, and they also improved some extra contract days with that change order. The next page, change order five, was adding 30 thrust blocks to provide additional protection to the water system. That was $24,000, roughly. The next page talks about, it shows, based on the drawdown schedule that John Pedry helped us prepare in October, the Mazingo construction spend plan through April, the estimated plan through April was $3,409,552. The actuals are at $2,537,383. So they're about $872,000 under their spend plan through that January there, should say April. I forgot to catch that. But they're about 26% under their spend plan as it was laid out in October. A lot of that is due to significant underruns in March and April due to their delayed work because of the weather conditions. So that those figures show that they're 31% spent in 42% of the scheduled time span. So their current estimate of their completion date showing in their contract documents is the end of March of next year. So Dave mentioned that based on talking about the percent complete again, we're showing 31% of the budget is spent. I looked back and it in the contract documents, and so 9 of that actual $2,537,000, 932,000 of it was for advanced material purchases. So the 31% spent is a little misleading. If you take away the large material purchase, that would bring their budget spent just on the work they performed down to about 20%. So 20% spent for the 16% completion. They're doing okay there, but as far as schedule, I think that's yet to be seen. So the total budget for Mazingo is $8,083,730. That includes all their change orders. MC Engineering, their plan, and that February, I'm sorry, should say April, and it should say May billing. So their estimated plan that was laid out from October forward was around $313 million. They've spent $313,000. They've spent $353,000. So they're about $40,000 over their plan through that February, should say April. They're 13% over their plan from October forward. The CUME expended through March is $1,418,000. Contract budget, not including Amendment 5, is $1,784,000. So their budget remaining without Amendment 5 is $366,000. In looking at our interim loan interest status through April, the estimated plan that we calculated was $31,507. The actual is $29,074, so we're about $2,400 under our plan, 7.7%. And that's based on the plan of completing the project by March month end, 2020. Any questions on that status?
Tom, you mentioned under MC Engineering, and your figures show that money spent thus far, 1.7784462. Current budget remaining, you had a number other than 409. That's what we show.
Are you using the updated?
I think, your number is showing 409 on that page?
Yes.
Oh, it should say 360. The 409 was before I put in their latest payment.
Oh, okay.
So
all right.
That should be 366.
I got it. Thank you.
Okay. So,
are you not looking at the updated deck?
Evidently, no.
You know, we're leasing it out.
I'm sure she did. Yeah. We'd love it. Okay. But don't stop.
The updated text should show 366.
It does.
Yeah.
That's correct.
All right. There's no more questions on that section. I'll talk about the additional project scope. They've explained that based on the April revised breakdown that came in, they separated it into three phases. Phase one is the highest priority, which are basically, they recommend that those get started now. Phase two, hold off till September, see how everything's going budget-wise, and then revisit it, make our decisions then. And then phase three, we'd wait until January of next year, again, kind of wait and see how the project's going and make decisions on those. You can see in the table the total estimated cost of each phase.
broken down by the design and construction management costs versus the construction costs and the number of days that we estimate it would add to the project schedule. So the total estimated cost compared to the estimate that we had back in January, it's showing $877,000 now. Back in January, it was about $896,000. So it's gone down some. You see over in the notes, these are still only budget numbers. Mazingo really needs some of MC Engineering's drawings and sketches to more accurately firm up their cost quotes. The work can be performed. Some of it can be performed concurrent with the main contract, but in total, it will probably add 2 to 3 months to the end of the contract. So if they were able to complete everything by the end of March now, these phases would of additional work would add months to the project. So down below the table, you see phase one. The total interest that it would add is $61K. It would push the completion date out 1 month. Phase one and two, $115,000 of additional interest. It would push it out 2 months to the end of May. We added all three phases out 3 months to the end of June. So you can see the total estimated project and interest costs to the right there. And if we did all three phases, it, without the extra interest, it would come to $1,039,000, which is very close to what we were estimating in our January version. So based on discussing this with the Long Range Planning Committee, the recommendation that we want to bring forward is moving forward with phase one. And the request would be to have MC Engineering give us cost quotes to prepare the required drawings and sketches needed for the phase one new scope items, which are A1, A6, B1, B4, and B6, so that Mazingo could then give us firm price quotes for the construction. And once we have that, we can make the decision on moving forward with the construction for phase one. So we'll get back to that recommendation in a second. The next two pages are more for informational purposes, but it provides all the details of all the items that have been requested. The format, I kept the same order in the format as what was shown back in January, and based on the way we had it segregated by critical projects versus important projects. To the right now, the right part of the table, it shows the April revision, and the last column to the right, the revised priority, shows the green ones are the high priority, the red ones are the ones that we would look at in September, and the blue ones are the ones we would look at in January. So, going back to the recommendation, I guess I put that forward to the board for discussion. And if anyone on the Long Range Planning Committee has any comments to make that I didn't bring up, feel free to do so.
Pleasure of the board.
Yeah, so I think we should take a look at a number of things. I just lost the page, so bear with me. So this adds $544,000 to the current budget with Zingo's and MC Engineering's added costs. So the remaining amount between this total and the USDA budget amount of $12,226,000 brings us down to what number?
$635,000.
How much?
$635,000.
Yeah. So $635,000 unallocated at this point for what could easily be another 15 months of project. I think we have to be, and I've said this all along, we have to be really, really careful how far out we stick our neck financially, because we could easily have another winter like we had this winter. And if I calculate these interest rates at least closely enough, we're a year from now, our monthly interest cost would be about $65,000-$70,000. Isn't that about right, Tom?
No, I think it's more in the $45,000 to $50,000.
Yeah, well, I think it's.
I don't have my table in front of me, but I think I look out in the final month, the monthly amount was about $45,000 or $50,000.
Okay. So we could easily eat up another $150,000 to $200,000 in interest costs with an added 3 months. You know, and I'm thinking, you know, June, July, August of 2020, as opposed to the March, April, May time frame that Tom's, you know, put in this. So the point is, we need to keep some powder dry. And I'm not arguing against, you know, this phase one. I'm just wanting the board to be, you know, very clearly aware of just how tight our budget's going to become. And with only 16% of the project completed, there's 84% of the project that could be fraught with some expensive unknown items.
Plus anything else you come up between now and then.
Well, that's exactly right.
All right.
It's how strong are you with long range recommendation to do it now?
Personally, I've been on the fence, and after our conversation the other day, I think, you know, it's okay to go forward with it. But I say it's okay to go forward with. We need to be really, really prudent in managing any additional costs from this point forward.
Well, that's a message we delivered, and I thought it was heard. The proof's always in the pudding, I guess. But
well, with only 16% of the project completed, therein lies, you know, a big portion of my concern.
Agreed.
You know, with, you know, the first 16% has already cost us $500,000. Well, if we approve this amendment, you know, close to $1 million.
And some of that is one-time construction.
I understand
product
that.
Cost.
I understand that.
Okay.
But, you know, we're
the question we have to answer and agree upon is, if phase one is the highest priority, is it the highest priority, and we take the chance, and that's what you're alluding to, and I agree with that, or do we defer it and try and fund it later? I'm for taking the chance while we have the wherewithal to do it now. It's going to cost us more later if we defer.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Are these costs based on unit price additions that Mazingo supplied with the original bids?
They had some updated pricing for these projects. They still request a little bit more detail, so those prices are not
That's a very good question, because, you know, this is one of the big question marks, is what's the real number? You know, it could be considerably lower, it could be considerably higher. Mazingo has asked for design and engineering drawings before they will give us a number.
Yeah, so they for the especially for the big project, they need at least the topo map that mm-hmm. they had surveyed and some sketches from. They don't want the full detailed drawings that we provided in the past, but they need drawings so they can do their quantity takeoffs and everything. So, but they're committing to using the same linear footage, the price per linear foot that we've gotten on the rest of the contract, which is a good price.
Yes, that's good.
But, you know, they're like, these costs are very tentative until we see some drawings. And the big one, obviously, is, you know, it's a big project. So I think if we went forward and we authorized MC to do the drawings, just not the construction manager, just the drawings, we get the quotes from Mazingo, we can say, oh my gosh, it's way more than we thought, or we can move on. I think we get the information we need. You know, I'm hopeful. You asked me at the meeting, like, how I thought about the numbers, and if I were doing it, I would always overestimate, because I'm a pessimist, and I'm thinking it's always going to be more than what I'm going to estimate, but I don't know Mazingo, and I don't know, I'm still not that comfortable with how John does his estimating, so mm-hmm. I think we're in the ballpark, but until we see a quote, so I don't think it costs us that much money to get the quote. It costs us money to actually put the pipe in the ground, so...
And we'll have the drawings. So for future use, if we decide not to do it, the work is not in vain as far as the drawings, the surveying. We'll still have that for future, so.
Yeah.
So the next step is to proceed, and we will, by motion and vote. 1 second, please. Phase one, and secure the additional cost.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll make the call once we have the complete cost. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Joe, I cut you out.
Yeah, I think if you look at the risk factor between what we see now versus what could happen later, there are two different kinds of things. This one is an engineered thing that we saw that we feel that we need as such. And so I agree with your analysis that to do it later would be more expensive and more difficult as such. The back end is stuff that we would have not, something that we don't know totally, and that is like if you run into granite or something, that's a different kind of risk factor analysis as such. And this is this part here is system analysis. So you're right, I think, in putting the emphasis on the system as such. We're going to have an upgrade of the system and not leaving it and having to do it later, which means later will never come. But the rock kind of analysis is a kind of lower end, labor intensive things,
sure.
But not system wide. So I think you're doing what we know now from a system point of view, and who knows what we're going to run into with regard to unseen stuff on the ground.
And when I look at phase two, you know, I kind of look at some of those, and if it looks like we're going to have a really bad winter, maybe we hold off till January, and that's when we authorize some projects in phase two and phase three. Like, I mean, my whole point is, let's get through this summer. We think they're going to put the majority of the main lines in, and we see what we went into, and they're doing those cross-country runs that we're not sure about. And I think by fall, we'll have hopefully, a much better idea of what kind of change orders we've gotten hit with and know if we can do anything more. Maybe we stop after phase one or, you know.
Once you know what's in the ground, then you eliminate the back end risk.
Right.
For the most part.
Mm-hmm. So I'll entertain a motion onto the board's choice to move forward on this phase one matter, to proceed to secure the engineering costs and any other costs that may be involved.
Do you need a motion? Mm-hmm. Or can I second it? I'll move that we proceed to get the engineering quote and the construction quote for phase one.
And a second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed,
aye.
Nay. Opposed say nay. Abstentions, did we get everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. Matter carries. Okay.
Dave, one thing that I just thought of, you know, it sounded like you had some discussions with John and or Mazingo regarding their percent complete. Have we approached them, if they are in fact beyond or behind schedule, talking with them to see what they can do during these nights, months ahead to get them back on schedule or even ahead of schedule, not knowing what next winter is going to be like?
Well, in conversation with Jeff Graham, who's the estimator and the project manager for Mazingo on it, he has said that they will commit whatever crews they need to get it done. That's what I'm told. So if they have to add a crew, another crew, a pipeline crew, or which would, that's what it would probably be, they will do it. Now, that could incur some more inspection.
Right.
We have one inspector right now that's watching over, it was watching over the retros and the pipeline work. So he's jumping around. But if we have, now the retros are done, so he's watching the pipeline work and the services being installed work. So he's still, and if they added another crew, we might have to add another inspector. But that would incur some more costs that weren't anticipated. But as far as your question goes, they're committed. They want to finish it. And I'm assured by Jeff that they will do it. However they have to do it.
Okay. Well, hopefully they don't wait too long and it's not recoverable.
Right.
All right. The next section, it deals with the revised Amendment 5 status from MC Engineering. So on page 30, that discussion, the initial Amendment 5 request received on January 29th. Sharon Dave and myself met with John Pedry on the 31st to discuss some concerns that we had with it. The total request at that time was $69,918. All 421 hours were budgeted to John Pedry. Then on March 28th, Bob, Andy, Sharon, and Dave met with Pedry and Mark Carey to discuss the spending trends and meeting the contract budget. Based on that meeting, based on Bob's notes, the MC Engineering, Mark Carey, stated that barring any unknown factors,
on December 20th.
Somebody trying to talk?
No.
Who is that?
We had some background noise.
Go ahead, John.
All
right. So their intent is to close the contract at the original negotiated rate plus the additional items put forth in Amendment 5 of approximately $70,000. We received the revised Amendment 5 request on April 3rd. The total amount and the revised request was $74,361, and you can see there that instead of John being the one proposed to do all the work, they've reallocated some of the hours in those tasks. That revision includes a new request for a task 4.9.2 change orders.
$1,000 and some sub-dollars there, totaling $11,488. Based on further discussions, we discovered that is actually task one, or A1, of our new scope request. So in our long-range planning committee meeting, we discussed this the other day, and we requested that be removed from Amendment 5, and that would need to be a separate amendment. So a quick breakdown of the proposed tasks. Task 4.3, weekly construction meetings, field inspection management. They are requesting additional hours in that task, 48 hours total, part of which is coordination and maintaining the spoil site. Based on our discussion and talking this over with Dave, we feel that we can provide some of the support to that effort when it doesn't require any engineering effort. And so we're proposing that be reduced down to instead of 4 hours a month, 2 hours a month, reducing it by 24 hours and $3,906. On the next page, task 4.4, project manager USDA coordination. In there, they're requesting 15 additional meetings at 3 hours each. We felt, based on our long-range discussions, that was overkill. And so we're knowing that we have schedule risk, that the schedule could actually be extended for a few months, that we're not going to try to cut back that request. We'll allow it to stay in there. However, we will not require any meetings with John unless he's already going to be in town, eliminating any required travel time. And we'll only request John's attendance when there are issues meetings require his attendance be included. We have had no issues with task 4.5. Construction staking. There was nothing included in the amendment for that. However, Dave had a discussion with John, and he mentioned that they inadvertently left it out and that they thought it would probably be about $15,000. So based on our discussions, Sharon went back and looked at Amendment 4 and found that they had already requested and received budget for construction staking. So we're requesting that be removed from the amendment. I mean, there were no dollars requested as Amendment 5 has been as it currently stands, but we're requesting that they not be able to allow or add additional dollars that one. 4.9.1, no issues. 4.9.2, I mentioned earlier, that's the one that's really the item A1 from the new scope request and should be a separate amendment. And no issues with 4.10. So the recommended changes, their total request was 74,001. You take away the 24 hours from task 4.3 and remove 4.9.2, which is the A1 new scope task. The approved amount would be $58,967.
Chair, accept a motion to that effect. So moved. Motion would be to
approve $58,967
as recommended by long range planning, correct?
Yep.
All right. Second?
I'll second it.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those
aye.
Those opposed say nay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
The next topic is asset management plan update. So a meeting was held with MC Engineering on April 29th to review progress. And during that meeting, it was apparent that MC Engineering had completed 100% of the GIS mapping of assets, and it pretty much completed the asset inventory database for the water mainline replacement, which includes the mainline pipes, house services, valves, PRVs, hydrants, and air relief valves. During that meeting, there were a few discrepancies that were seen in the spreadsheet, and Dave and Billy were going to go back and just kind of go through it and review it, review the data for accuracy, looking at the ages of the different assets that were showing in there and the pipe size, make sure that they were all accurate. MC Engineering is currently identifying all the assets for the wells, water treatment plants, storage tanks, booster pumps, and individual PRVs, and they have a separate spreadsheet for those, and they're inputting all the values in that database to so that we can arrive at the remaining life and replacement cost of each of those assets. And John mentioned during our meetings that the new meters will be added in the final asset report. So as far as their budget goes, they were the total request that was up forward was $45,190. MC Engineering's total cost based on the latest email, Mark Carey, is $31,832. So their budget remaining is $13,400. In that same email, Mark Carey mentioned that John Pedry would be providing a revised report outline. In that email, Mark Carey also mentioned that the remaining budget was adequate to complete the asset management plan, but I feel that I'm not 100% convinced of that, and I think Dave and I will, you know, once we get to the point of receiving this other spreadsheet, the asset inventory for the treatment plant, well, all that, I think we really need to sit down with them and make sure we're on the same page as far as what the remaining tasks are to for the final asset management plan to provide us what we really want and need. So next bullet talks about the asset inventory database. That's from everything I read, that's a very critical first step in constructing the entire asset management plan, and it serves as a basis for the plan. It includes listing of all the assets, where each asset is located, the current value of each asset, the year of installation, typical useful life, remaining life, and estimated cost to replace each asset. So the large spreadsheet they've given us for the water main line replacement asset inventory does include all of that information. The next page, 34. I received the Excel file that is their inventory database for the water main line replacements, and it's listed and grouped by pressure zone and then by street. There's 151 line items in there. I did some calculations, and you can see there that based on that inventory, it's showing current values broken down by main lines, house services, single and double, valves, PRV, hydrants, and air relief valves. So the current values that it's showing for all those assets is $17.1 million.
Then I looked at the section of their spreadsheet that calculates the based on the remaining life, it calculates the cost to replace estimates. So each of those assets shows what the end of life year is, and so there were, you can see there that if you look at the entire spreadsheet, there's several years there that the assets life ends. So I'm showing the first group would the life would end in the year 2032, 12 years from now. The way you read this table, based on an amortization rate of 3%, you see there the values to replace at those end of year life time periods. But based on the net cost, if assuming we are investing money and we get a 2% return on that money, the net cost with value of money would be the values in the right column there. So you can see there that in the year 2032, to replace all those assets would be $536,000. And you can just go down through the years and see that the total replacement cost of this, remember that this isn't all of our assets. We still got to get the information from them for the treatment plant and wells and so forth. But the replacement, the net cost to replace those based on those years where the end of life years is at around $30 million.
So, Tom, question for you. As you go down either the cost to replace at 3% or the value of cost of money at 2%, the numbers go up and then they go down significantly and then back up significantly. What's causing that fluctuation?
It's just how many assets are their life is ending in that year.
Okay. Got it.
See, yeah, I mean that in 70 years from now, that's when all the new pipelines will be end of life. That's why the value is so large out there.
I won't be alive.
You move.
Pipeline.
You move to the next page. As part of John's last presentation, this first section up there describes the MC Engineering's recommended path forward, what they're calling phase two. The asset inventory database, we've been calling phase one. So what they view going forward is to discuss and decide on the cost output reports. And they view that as consisting of establishing four specific reserve accounts, a long-term replacement cost, and he's saying looking at 10, 25, and 70 years increments. The next category would be short-term costs for repairs, preventative, and emergency maintenance. And then we didn't really receive any explanation for number three, but he's got included in there, consider purchase of long-term water from CCWD.
Been pushing that for years.
And then four is water meter replacements program. And to establish an annual capital replacement and maintenance reserve accounts with graphical interpretation. And in there he stated that based on the decisions above, they would need to make revisions and review the data for each category with Dave and the staff, approve the improvement and upgrade approach, and conduct a workshop with draft plan and prepare the final plan as a working document. One thing that I've mentioned to John and Dave, and I think what this is probably really going to require I plan on coming back up to Arnold in about a week or so. So I think we really need to sit down and look at the asset management plan and compare it to our reserves policy and how historically we've approached our annual O&M budget for repair and maintenance, and make sure that we're not duplicating anything in the asset management plan as far as revenue requirements that are already included or plan to be included somewhere else. If you look at our reserve policy that was approved, there are capital asset reserves planned in that of $346,000, and operating reserves planned for $272,000. So all that needs to be discussed thoroughly before we start this phase two of this plan. Page 36. I've read quite a bit online on asset management plans and looked at other asset management plans for water companies. And some of the things that I found mentioned repeatedly were in building an effective asset management plan are the things that I've listed there below. So what I want to do is, you know, once I get back up there, sit down with Dave and John, make sure that these areas are being considered in their phase two and taken into account in our plan. So the items listed below, you know, you need to make sure that you really look at the assets and that you're actually doing the most cost-effective maintenance, repair, and replacement at the right time during the asset's life cycle. So you can take a reactive approach and wait until things break and fix it. That's typically not the way to go, but that's the way a lot of companies do it because funding's tight. They just kind of keep kicking the can down the road. And so I think this area really needs to be analyzed, and our plan needs to document what our asset maintenance, repair, and replacement strategy is. The next item there, the asset management plan translates into what our long-term financial planning should be, and it identifies our priorities, what we can afford and not afford, and any challenges and obstacles that we may need to overcome in order to maintain our assets at the proper service levels. Again, with budgets likely to remain tight, the final financial plan will help us determine which of our objectives are feasible, which are most important, and how we are going to be able to maintain our priority assets over the long term. So, and I believe this discussion needs to occur. Our plan should document what our objectives, priorities, and what our affordability plan is. Obviously, the end result of the dollars are going to be, you know, way more than what we can afford to set aside. So we need to really analyze, you know, replacements versus repair and maintenance, and, you know, the proper times to do all this, and figure out exactly how much we can afford. And so I think all that needs to occur before we authorize MC Engineering to go forward with the next phase. Any questions?
Any questions to Tom?
Comment. Tom, this is Jeff. The only thing that I question is the lifespan of the PVC pipe. I don't see any of the other assets detailed. I would point out that no one today can really talk about how long PVC pipe will last. It's only been used in the United States for the early 50s. So that's where maybe the 70-year lifespan comes from, but that pipe that's in the ground today could be there for the next 100 years, easy. I would point to a large contractor in the Bay Area trying to dispose of old PVC pipe responsibly, and the message from the environmental folks was, take it to the landfill. It'll be there forever, and it won't degrade into anything bad. The main failure rate in jointed pipe, push-on pipe, is gaskets. And the gasket technology has come so far in the last 20 or 30 years that I think those, everything's synthetic now, and the gaskets probably are going to last as long as the pipe does. So the biggest part of our assets is the piping. And I think that, you know, having it out 70 years, none of us are going to be around to worry about it. But I think that that asset could be moved out for a century or more. It's not going to go away. And maybe that's a moot point.
No.
No, I think Dave, and you can chime in on this too, but I think John feels the same way. I've heard him make comments that, the pipe's going to most likely last way beyond the 70 years. I think he's also aware of that, but I don't know, what we do.
Well, that's it. We could sit down, like you say, John, Tom, and talk to him about that, because we could, like Jeff was saying, failures. The pipe has saddles on it. It has services attached. So instead of replacing the entire pipe, maybe we can go in and replace the saddles. Will start deteriorating the services, over time, because they're metal parts. So you can go in and leave the pipe in place, replace the saddles, dig down. It's cheaper than doing a whole new project. That would be something we could look at. So there's some things we could talk about on that.
Right. All right. I need to take a quick break. I'll be right back.
My question is to him, but I'll ask it here.
Oh, okay.
Has anybody done an estimate of what these values may be on an annual basis? Yeah, just so we know where we're going this section. They offer, or something reasonable, or whatever. I think you can run a pre-estimate of what this would be if you try to annualize this thing. And obviously, you have to break it down such every year the same thing, even though the requirement would be different. You'd want to average it as such. So we just know where we're headed for. How much do we have to stretch this down? The other comment I had, which is the best way to comment this, is I agree with you, the pipe. I used to work for a water treatment company, but with heavy duty PVC pipe and putting all that stuff together. But the problem with failure is not the pipe, it's the joints.
Whether it's a gasketed joint or it's a solvent well joint, if it's done properly, it's stronger in fat than the pipe itself. Well, but that's the industry standard for solvent weld is very clear and concise, and even the poorest contractors know how to glue the pipe together. And it's not glued; it's a solvent weld. The pipe is broken down, the fitting is broken down, and when it comes together, it's welded together. It's a solvent weld, and it's stronger and will last longer. The gasketed pipe is intended to move and work through bends and surges and all that stuff. So I think we have to count on the contractor that's putting in the ground is capable of doing it correctly, and if it's done right, it's not going to come apart.
part of it. But my point is that it's going to fail if it fails locally, and that could be a large failure to our system as such.
No, the pipe, you know, the pipe's only going to fail if somebody drives something through it.
Yeah. So it's a local failure.
I'll second the motion about how the pipe separates, though. It wasn't glued together properly to begin with.
It's typically a homeowner that has screwed it up.
Not a contractor. This is Andrew. To Tom's point about maintaining a reserve, I'd just add that not only is it a prudent idea, but it's actually required by the Mutual Water Company law.
Right.
That you have a prudent reserve, keep the system in continuous operation. So I can help with some of the aspects of that and setting it, but I see that as at least the floor for where your reserve has to be by law, and anything above and beyond it is board policy.
Hey, Tom?
Yes, I'm back.
When do you come back to Arnold?
Next week.
I believe we're going to be driving back up to California a week from tomorrow.
Okay.
I think that's 19th.
And then are you...
But I probably won't be in Arnold until like that Tuesday or Wednesday.
Okay.
Will that be 21st, 22nd?
Okay. And then are you here for the summer, roughly?
Yeah, then I'm here probably till mid-September or so.
Okay.
All right, so the next... section deals with the bi-monthly billing and payments process.
Tom, before we go to that, are there any last questions about the SS management plan? We've been on this. We've already approved the fact it's going to happen. So, all right. Sorry, Tom. Go ahead.
All right. So, Bob and staff have had discussions regarding going from our current payment of billing and payment to transition to a bi-monthly billing and payment process, hopefully starting next year in January. So our current billing process, we have our base rate that's billed on an annual basis due by February 15th each year, and then we have consumptive charges, our usage rate that's billed bimonthly at $1.60 per 100 cubic feet for usage greater than 350 cubic feet a month. The proposed billing process, the base rates, instead of an annual base rate at the beginning of the year, it'd be billed also bimonthly in six equal installments. And that base rate would be based on the annual shareholder fee amount in place and the rate category of the shareholder, whether it be a home with a meter, a lot, or a combined lot. The first payment will be for January and February, due by mid-March, and then every 2 months after that. Consumptive charges would be also be billed as they are now, bimonthly, at the same time and in the same bill as the base rate, using the usage rate structure that's in place at the time. Obviously, the shareholder would still have the option of making their full payment up front. So, some questions and thoughts that came up in
so
looking...
Tom, let me ask you this question. I don't think we have, in fact, I know we didn't discuss it. So what happens when we start repaying the USDA loan? Would there be a third line item on the bill?
Yes, there would be. And Lee, I'm not sure, we had talked about that briefly. It might have to be two additional line items. One for the infrastructure and one for the meters. Do you have any information on that, Lee?
No new information yet.
Okay. Yeah, but there'll definitely be, we would try to just have one additional line for the USDA.
Okay.
Tom?
Yes.
Even are we required to stipulate it that way in the billing process to identify the loan?
Yes.
Okay.
That answer is correct, isn't it, Lee?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
They have to keep it separate.
Okay.
I just don't know how separate it is.
What's your issue about?
No, it's not so much an issue, but my understanding is that our base rate will drop, should drop, because over the past few years, the majority of it has been made up of construction costs. And as we get through the loan, whatever the end of the loan period is, I would assume that the base rate, which is, if it's say $60 now, will drop. Will drop to and be able to include the interest cost on the loan.
Yeah, I know that's what we have said all along, and I think we even modeled it a year ago or so.
Okay.
As long as that's still an understanding, that's all right. I mean, we understand this. This billing process should not be new to anyone. Anyone that has come up to this part of the world from some place that had a water company was billed every bi-monthly. I can't find a variance from that, especially in the Bay Area. So people going on to a bi-monthly billing process should not be shocked. There should be no awe and shock to it. That aside, some of the stones we're going to have to deal with is that how about people that don't have a meter? And long-range planning has pointed out, well, we're going to split the annual rate into six equal installments. That covers that. But in sometime in 2021, I'm guessing, to comply with the rules of the loan payback, we'll start to incorporate what you just talked about, and there'll be a base rate, which will be lower than it was the year before, which is now next year. There'll be a consumptive rate based upon their use, and then there's a third line item or a billing item that says, in essence, your share of the loan interest.
That's correct.
Okay.
But to be clear, the base rate is our company's fixed costs,
yes,
divided by 1709 plus some
lots and combined lots and stuff like that.
Plus, yes. Plus the conveyance fees.
And bad debt fees.
Right.
And board honorariums.
Yeah.
as a shareholder, it would be more advantageous for me to have that base rate paid over six installments than the first one. You know, the homeowner's dues, the HOA dues, property taxes, all that stuff coming up first of the year. It'd be nice to have something spread out.
I'm going to assume it's a standard in utilities, because I know the phone company bills every other month. The power company.
I give every month.
Eugenie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the water company bills every other month.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there are businesses that do so. I mean, we have the power in our hands to bill every 3 months if we wish. What's fairly unique about our system, we have to remember, there's only 12 to 15% that use it full time. So that's going to be adjustment we're going to have.
Does that big influx of I'm sorry.
That's right. Go ahead.
Does that big influx of cash at the beginning of the year, is that required? Do we need that to? Okay.
No.
So this is Tom. We should probably go through the questions and responses, because you're getting into areas that get get addressed there.
Okay. Let me. I've been putting Joe off, as I do too often.
That was my question also, is that right now we're billing the home cost at the beginning of the year. It's now, from a company point of view, is that we get our money from, we know where we are as such, you know, and then the rest of it varies, it's just a small amount, so that our budgets are set, and it's already in place. So everybody knows what that is, and now you're changing it to you're going to start spreading that out. And I'm not sure what problem you're trying to solve, in the sense of going the other way would be the hard part. Going out and spreading it out is more collection work, you know, a little more of a cash flow problem issue. But right now, you've got a perfect deal. You know where your budget, you can set your budget because you know what your income is going to be, exactly. And you got it all up front. So why are we changing it? The other stuff, they have to build over a period of time.
Why are we changing it? Because of the consumptive issue.
You're going to do that anyway. If you...
Well, you know, how many times do you want to bill a consumer? That's another matter we have to talk about. And, you know, it's $2,400 to $2,800 every time we send out a bill. If we bill once for the base rate and then bi-monthly for consumptive rates, I don't know if it'd be cost neutral over a year or not. When I look at our numbers and what we have in the bank, we can make a conversion like this and remain whole financially. But that's an interesting point that you make, however, that we have to remember that we don't have 72% of our income in the first month.
Exactly.
Yeah, we just have to be able to cover our cash flow requirements for, you know, the first 2 months out of the year with whatever we collect.
Well,
carry forward, you know, from the prior year.
Right.
Okay, Tom, it's back to you. Did I skip anyone here? Somebody have a question? Tom, go ahead.
The first question that we addressed there, how do we handle the rates for shareholders that have meters connected during the year? So at the time that they have their meter activated, their bill would be revised from a non-metered to a metered rate, along with any usage charges that exceed their base allotment, and they'd be billed based on that change in the first billing cycle following the meter connection. On the next page, 39.
So to be clear, the billing process itself will not change. Starting in January, your recommendation is to bill bi-monthly. Now, when a person goes on a meter, they're already on a bi-monthly payment system.
Right.
The only change is we add the consumptive rate to it.
Right.
Got it.
So the next question, based on bi-monthly billing cycle, and this was just kind of brought up a second ago, will our income profile satisfy the estimated monthly expense profile? So the little table there shows the last 2 years, the actual expense profiles, and you can see there that for the most part, the monthly expenses are relatively level and should not pose a problem with us receiving our income on a bi-monthly cycle. These values that are showing are just our operating expenses. They don't include USDA costs. So, the next question, how does revised bi-monthly billing affect our annual USDA loan repayments? So, if we were to borrow the full amount, $12.3 million, our repayment amount is $437,000 a year, and it starts 1 year after construction is complete. With the current billing process, the income that would cover the USDA loan could be collected in January and February, as it was this year. You know, it was requested in January and due by February 15th. With a bi-monthly billing, you won't be getting all that money up front. So we would most likely need to build our income for that USDA loan payment starting next year. Instead of waiting till 2021, we would have to build that into our rates in 2020. Otherwise, we wouldn't have enough. Well, depending on when construction actually gets completed, say it's out in June of 2020, and our first $437K is due in June of 2021, but collecting our revenues on a bi-monthly basis, we may not have enough to cover that. So I need to look at that further and see if we would indeed have to start collecting some of that in our 2020 rate.
Yeah, so if construction is completed, let's say, to use your example, in June, you know, we could start billing at that same date or same time for the USDA loan, so that when the payment's due 1 year later, we have accrued and collected, you know, that money.
Yeah, so you're saying we would change their rate partway through the year when the construction is complete?
Yep.
Yeah, that's possible.
You know, if we have to have it as a separate line item, as Lee said, that shouldn't be any problem. You just start the,
that's a good idea.
Add it on as a, you know, the line item in the bill.
Well,
assuming there's going to be adjustment to the base rate, that'd be the time to do it. If we can adjust the base rate at any time, if we do it in March for January and February of 2020, why not do it then? Right, for the whole year.
Yeah, that's definitely. I can look at that and get more information for the next time we talk. But yeah, that's definitely a possibility.
It's about $35 a person per year.
What's 35, Bob?
No, I miscalculated. What I did is I took the 437,000 and divided by the number of customers we have.
Yeah, it's $255 a year.
And then you divide that by 6.
Right.
It's
$42.62.
Yeah.
Every 2 months.
That's not coming out of. I mean, if you look at what they're paying now for the base rate, that's not going to add that money to what they're already paying.
No.
We hope not. We hope the base rate.
It's only because it's offset, because we don't know when the.
We hope that it's going to get decreased.
I mean, maybe not much, though. It's not going to add 200 and some odd dollars to their yearly.
We hope not.
The $255 is the amortization rate per person per year on the $437,000 USDA requirement payment, annual payment.
But if we take what they pay now, the 800 and the base rate, and we project that over the entire year of that income, that that'll come out of that. I mean, pretty much right now.
Well, yeah. To keep it at a zero rate of increase, we have to find $437,000 in our budget.
What we get now, right?
To net zero.
So this year, if you go back and look at our budget, we're spending, or we have in our budget, $600,000-$800,000 of USDA costs that we're covering.
Mm-hmm.
That go away when the project's complete, and all those, as everybody's mentioning here, are going to reduce our base rates because we won't have those costs anymore, and we'll be reimbursed for them.
Right.
So we could figure that out.
The structure of the base rate will change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because you'll have your
operating costs and then USDA loan amortization.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And your
over the last several years, we've been spending more than the $437K on either well developments, you know, if you go back several years, and then we got into the USDA loan, and for the last several years, we've been spending more than the $437K on areas that we won't have going forward.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh.
Good. Good.
All right. The next question was, what are shareholder payment options? Paper check, cash, electronic, credit card, or e-pay via a shareholder's checking account? Move on to the next page.
You know, if the Miwok Indians get involved, we might have to accept one of them.
Bitcoin.
Before we leave,
nobody has any.
Before we leave, item number four, I would like to, and it's my intention to, unless the board feels to the contrary, to push the shareholders at the annual meeting to consider to paying us electronically, and the choice is up to them. If they use bill pay, which most banks have. And credit unions, there's no particular or separate charge to the consumer for that. At least in the banks that I've surveyed, there are none. If they put it on a mileage card, a credit card, get miles to fly on Southwest Airlines, then there's a conveyance fee. And then who pays the conveyance fee? I think we should, and pass that cost on to the customer. For those that don't have computers, you don't need a computer to have bill pay. You need a checking account. And in talking to the staff, and you'll be getting a report on this in the next couple of weeks, there are businesses that will do all of this for you, everything. And then there's a charge for it. And when that is presented to the board, the cost, of course, will be included. But there are companies that will go out, they'll send out the billing, and they'll accept the checks or all the electronic payments, or how, with the exception of the six people that walk in here once a year and pay cash, they'll accept everything else. And I just want to throw that in there for just to be thinking about it, that... because the first payment is in March of 2020, that's not that far away. And there are people I know that even if you don't have a computer, there are people that have automatic payments coming out of checking accounts. And for those that choose not to address any type of, other than I want to write a check, they can do so. Sorry, Tom.
Okay, so...
Yeah, the other thing we should do is at check-in for the annual meeting is collect email addresses.
We're going to collect emails. We're going to give them a card that says, please give us your emails. We put it out in the monthly billing about sending us your email. We're getting responses on that. We're going to, or I'd like to give them a short announcement on the fact we're going to electronic payments, electronic payment acceptance, and how the shareholder can handle it, so forth and so on. So, yeah, we're going to do that. We keep pushing for email addresses, and they're reticent to give them to us for some reason. Again, for the third time. Sorry, Tom.
Yeah, that's definitely. And I think we need to make sure that we move forward with this with our eyes wide open. And so I'll kind of get into some discussion points that we need to take into account. Next question deals with how do we handle credit card conveyance fees? They're currently being paid as part of our operating expenses and not charged directly to the shareholder. Through March, there were 259 payments by credit card, which represented 12% of all payments. Realize that these payments were large dollar amounts because they were annual fees. The fee amount, or the dollar amount that's being put through on the credit card affects the amount of the conveyance fee. So for those 259 payments, our conveyance fees with First Data amounted to $6,562. So I got the note there. At this point, we don't really know what the annual fees would amount to. During our discussions in the Long Range Planning Committee on this topic, some concerns were expressed in implementing a new, potentially expensive process that could have some pretty significant impacts on shareholder rates. So the next bullet there says we need to make sure we obtain more information on the outside service options that can be provided, what we need, and better estimates of the cost. So Lee Schmeeds and I have had a couple discussions, and she's been gathering information from a few companies that handle electronic billing and payment services. We've got some information that we can pass along. Lee, I don't know if you want to pass any of that along right now, or I can summarize our discussions with the board.
Well, pretty much what I would say would be what you would summarize right now, so you can go ahead.
Say that again.
What I would say is what you are about to say, so you can go ahead and take the reins.
Could I ask you, okay, if you would, Tom, indulge me here, would you? Lee, we talked about it briefly the other day, and it was kind of interesting. You mentioned there are two companies that you're interacting with and looking at. One looks superior to the other. Okay, of the two, of that one, what would the charge be per customer?
That's 2 to 2.5% conveyance fee they automatically charge the customer, or if the dollar amount is less and warrants, it's a $2 fee for a credit card. It's 25 cents for a check, for an online check or automatic bank pay.
And this is a third party. And for that 25 cents or $2, the third party handles all the billing?
They do. They will handle even snail mail. So they will handle email billings, they will handle snail mail billings. Their snail mail billings are at 39 cents, whereas ours is at least 57 plus. They will handle the payments, receiving of the payments, charge the customers if we want it to go that way, or charge us if we want to handle the credit the conveyance fees. And they will also turn around and they send us deposits every morning that automatically go into each individual account in Black Mountain. It's invaluable if we're going to bill 2,000 people every 6 months.
Every 2 months.
I mean, every 2 months.
Well, we
six
are.
Times a year.
Not if, we're going to.
So then to me, that is an invaluable option, not even an option.
That's 12,000 billings.
Yeah.
And the negotiated price is either $2 or 25 cents, and depending on what method is used.
It depends also on what credit card is used. If it's a debit card, it's charged more than a credit card. If it's American Express, Discover, their fees are higher than MasterCard or Visa. So we can, in what we give them, we can say, okay, we only want MasterCard and Visa cards to be accepted. Mm-hmm. Or we only want, because the dollar amount is now going from $800 a year to $100 times six times a year, we could say we only want to do online bank pay and be 25 cents. So your cost has just plummeted if we do checks as opposed to credit cards.
Okay.
Well, we have time to work.
I just think this one company to me is miles above what the other company provides.
Well, let's go back, because it's never going to go to 600 because they still have to pay the USDA thing. So what they're paying will always be the $800.
I think roughly 800, roughly. Correct.
So right now, we paid $25 per person who paid their flat rate.
Yeah,
that's what we paid.
Yep. That's a conveyance fee. The 2.5 would be $24.
The conveyance fee should not be billed to the customer.
Okay.
I agree.
Walk into a restaurant. It seems to me the oil industry is the only one that has been successful in adding a dime or 15 cents to every gallon if you use a credit card. Walk into any restaurant, they don't have separate menu items for charge or cash. Mm-hmm. The fee is built into the price of the meal and in almost everything else. We made a decision at Deere a number of years ago not to charge freight on any deliveries. Freight cost was built into the charge for the material, so that the hat's in there. Somebody's
sure.
paying for it, but put it someplace else rather than a conveyance fee.
So the California Franchise Tax Board requires certain people that have a tax payment above a certain level to pay electronically. And they tack on 2.5% to whatever that is. Mm-hmm. It's annoying as hell.
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
And no, they won't. No,
get away with it.
And no, you can't write it off.
And no, there's no other payment option. You have to pay by credit card.
And one of the things I will put out there is not everyone now chooses to use credit cards. So if we add that to the shareholders' fee, then the people who are using a check are paying more for the people who want to use a credit card.
Well, then you've got the part-timers argument. You know, we're paying for the full-timers' use of our water, so it's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so there's something wrong with everything that's we do.
Not anymore. Well, once you get on the meter, you're paying for what you use. Yeah, it's...
Hello, this is Mark.
Yeah, Mark.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you pay your property taxes, the county charges you to use your credit card or to give you the option to put in your bank account info, and it's free. I don't think we should, in my opinion, I don't think we should subsidize the credit card.
So have the customer pay.
That's just money. That's just money that we pay. It has to be made up somewhere else.
And the shareholder can choose what method he wants to use.
Right.
And he may choose to use the cheaper method rather than the more expensive.
Right. If he wants some money's point, let him pay for them. We're not a restaurant where you want it's convenient to try to draw customers in.
Good point.
That's just my thoughts.
This is Tom. So I think Lee, based on our discussions the other day, payment by e-check or out of their checking account electronically the charge for that is only like 6.5% of the fee for using credit cards. So it's definitely a lot cheaper. You know, the big questions that we don't know is how many people would pay by credit card and how many people would be willing to pay through an e-check method. If you get a large percentage of our shareholders wanting to pay by credit card, I think our annual fees could be, $30,000 or $40,000.
I mean, if I can use a credit card and get money back, like on my Amazon card or my Costco card, I do it. It doesn't cost me anything.
Right. Yeah.
If this money shows up in my pocket later.
Yeah. So I do think that a little more discussion on this regarding what we offer as far as whether or not we pay the conveyance fees or we don't. I think that discussion needs to happen, because I think we really need to get a good handle on what cost we're really committing to.
This is Sharon. I have one more string to throw out there, and I'm sure Tom has figured this out. So, you know, we put these retrofit meters in, and now we've given out $7,800 in credits because these people paid the flat rate in February, and now they're on a meter, so they've been credited the difference for the year, for the remainder of the year. It's been prorated. So by the end of this year, we'll have the rest of the retrofits on. We'll probably have to credit another $25,000. And then next year, we'll probably be crediting another $30,000 or so. So this money that's going to go in, and then we're not giving it back, but it's just sitting out there waiting for them to use up that allocation. So I'm just throwing it out there.
We have options how we can...
Right. So like right now, let's say you got a new meter. You're a retrofit, Jeff. So you have a credit of...
$55.
So you're good for the rest of the year. You're not going to get a bill. Now, if you go over your allotment, say in July and August, and people do, they'll just pull that money out. You know, you might get a statement saying we've debited your account by $5 because you used more than your allotment. But there's this money out there that we have that, I mean, it's ours, but it's not really ours, right? So, and we're going to be doing this again next year, so I just want us to be aware of it. I know it's in the grand scheme, it's not a lot of money, but it's something that keeps me up at night, so I just thought I'd put it out there for you guys.
Well, the reality is, based on what I'm looking at on page 40 of this deck that Tom's pulled together, is that, you know, through March of this year, 259 payments, or 12%, were done by credit card.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 1/8 of the year. And if we annualize that $6,500 or $6,600, that's over $50,000 a year in costs, assuming 100%.
Yeah, but you can't do that because that's on an $800 bill. The rest
$800 to $860
on a $100 bill
invoice.
But still, you'll end up with $6,000 at the end of the year.
Well, then, you know.
You're still going to see this amount at the end of the year.
The annual $800 payment then will cost the company over $50,000 plus whatever else follows on throughout the course of the year. So, you know, it could easily be a $75,000 to $100,000 number.
I don't think so. I think that's way too high.
Well, it may be, Lee, but I'm just doing the math.
Should we consider that? You bet.
There's one other wrinkle that, not to get ahead of ourselves, but we're recommending that the shareholder line loan repayments be on the bi-monthly bill. So there's a possibility too that the loan payments coming in up to $10,000 annualized or amortized over 5 years could be credit card payments also.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Can we do something? Can we consider something for next year where we don't accept credit cards? If we do this outside billing, can we say you can pay by e-bill or
send us a check? Yep.
And see how
that will bring the payments down, I mean, to nothing.
Or do what the state of California does.
Charge conveyance.
Yeah, they just, you know.
I'm fine with that.
If you use a credit card, then you're responsible for the 2.5%.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That takes it off of our lap or off our table and puts it on the end of theirs.
So. Yes. Or you can use your checking account, which won't cost
right.
you
anything. Right.
Yeah. Or, you know, on your way to the post office, you could drop off that fistful of cash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No,
yeah, that's cost you anything.
Yeah, that's a great
idea. Where'd you get the money? There's no bank.
Okay, Tom, you have some suggestions for Andrew.
I do. Let's see. So that's, I guess, we're up to page 42. So based on the Long Range Planning Committee reviewing the loan document, we passed along to Andrew a few of our questions, and in paragraph 1.2 of the loan agreement. That we found the language there a little difficult to comprehend, and provided a suggested red line based on that. Andrew updated the document, as he will go through in a few minutes, and shown in 1.2 and 1.5 of his latest version. So then we passed along a comment to him about the capping of the loan at $10,000. The application under seven general provisions of 7.2. It mentions there that requests we recommended adding a second sentence to that general provision 7.2, loan requests in unusual circumstances where the pre-construction quote exceeds 10,000 max will be considered on an individual basis, required, and require board approval. Andrew updated the document to add a sentence stating, at the request of the shareholders, the Blue Lake Springs Board of Directors may exercise its sole discretion to approve a waiver of the $10,000 loan maximum. Number three, in our long-range committee discussions, we talked about the possibility of needing a more in-depth review of some of the more expensive or complex line installations to evaluate the risk, realizing that liability reasons, our staff or board cannot get directly involved in the installation of any or offer of any advice. Perhaps we could have Dave and his staff perform the due diligence during the application and agreement approval process, those complex sites by walking the property, doing their due diligence to see if they feel that there's any risk in the way that the application was presented, either the cost might look suspect or if anything else. Based on that, they make their decision on approval or disapproval or going back to the shareholder and letting them know what our concern is. In Andrew's memo that he sent out, he recommends that the board discuss the appropriate level of water company staff involvement on this issue with input from long range and legal. So I believe Andrew's planning on discussing these next in line, I think, in the start package.
Very good. Thank you, Tom. Thank you for summarizing the comments. So I think this is your next agenda item, but we have a staff report for you that discusses some of the work that Dave, Lee, and I have done on the draft agreement and application. But just to summarize what's there, we took the board's direction from the last meeting and put together what we think is a fairly user-friendly agreement and application that shareholders could use to obtain a loan if they have a financial hardship and need to fund between $1,000 and $10,000 for a line replacement project. The $10,000 maximum is something that we're recommending. It was not part of the board's direction at the last meeting, but this is something that we've taken a look at and think is an appropriate limit, at least as an initial matter for these sorts of loans. And we had a couple reasons for doing that. One is $10,000 we think is probably above the cost for almost any of the replacement projects, so we think it's a reasonable cap. Point two is there may be some tax consequences, and I don't want to get too far into it because we haven't studied it fully, but there may be some tax consequences having to do with 0% loans and imputed interest because it's below market rate. So there's some provisions in the tax code about shareholders and company loans above $10,000. So we think $10,000 is a good a good cap to avoid those liabilities, be within that safe harbor that applies to $10,000 or less loans.
And we don't want anything that will affect our nonprofit, not-for-profit status.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. So we think that's a safe place to be.
Okay.
The other reason is the board, as we added per Tom's comment, the board can waive this requirement or really any of the eligibility requirements on a case-by-case basis if something comes up. So you're retaining flexibility while still creating a program that staff can administer within the guidelines that you've set out. There's some discussion in the staff report about the process for getting a loan. Essentially, you submit an application. Staff will determine whether you meet all of the eligibility requirements as a shareholder. Check if you have any delinquencies on your record, make sure you're not a director. Sorry, one of the things we determined was it wouldn't be a good idea for directors to be eligible for the loan program. There's a provision in the corporation's code that just makes it very hard for a company to do loans to directors for transparency reasons. But, assuming that shareholders are eligible, they'd sign a loan agreement with the water company that could be executed by staff. It's a very basic loan agreement that essentially says you're going to repay on the schedule that's in the application. And then the shareholder goes out and does their project. Once they actually have the invoice in hand, not the estimate, but the actual invoice, having done the project, that's when they'd be eligible to get the loan proceeds. So it's sort of a complicated process. I think a lot of shareholders may have some questions about how that works, but we went through a couple different ways that this could work, and we decided this is the one we recommend. It's probably the easiest. It gives the least amount of staff administration effort because you're going to actually have your costs in hand when it's time for the company to actually commit to give you those loan proceeds. We also think it's going to give some flexibility to shareholders who can go out to contractors and say, I have a loan agreement in hand. The money is mine if I build this project and it meets all the eligibility requirements.
I think we have to be careful with how they do that, because that could give the contractor license to charge more exorbitant fees. Also to submit quotes that are inflated on purpose, and it's helped, if not completely covered, by paying on invoice or signed contract or something other than an estimate.
Yes, it's a push and a pull. You have a good point. It's both ways. Having the loan agreement in hand may mean that there's an inflated cost on the front end, but having the shareholder have to actually commit to pay it and then have the work done may be sort of a balancing mechanism for that. And this leads partly into Tom's comment from the Long Range Planning Committee about what's the appropriate level of water company involvement in deciding what is unreasonable, what is a reasonable project, what is not. And Dave and I have talked about this a little bit, because I think there's a tightrope to be walked on it, where the water company should not be, in my recommendation, you should not be involved in deciding which project is feasible on a technical level, or which contractor is not able to perform the project as they've estimated. Unfortunately, that's something that the shareholder is just going to have to take the risk for. And the more the company gets involved in that, the more you are taking on the risk if something happens. But on the other hand, you still need to be good financial stewards of water company money. And so if you get in a estimate for a couple feet of line replacement, and it says $10,000 on it, we think there's a place for water company staff to say, this is frankly unreasonable. This is not something that we can agree to fund, because on its face, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, there's going to be some of that.
There may be some of that, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we can depend on staff to know that and do that kind of stuff. I mean, I think we based our original estimate of cost at $15 a linear foot, which I think is low, but still, whether it's $15, $20, or $25, it's not going to be $50 or $100 a foot, and you know, staff will get that taken care of if it is an issue. I just don't see a lot of people out to make money on this thing.
Well, I know.
I don't necessarily agree with that. You know, since we have meth houses all up and down the highway, you know, there's all kinds of shit going on. So I think procedurally, you know, the shareholder should go get an estimate, a bid from their, you know, a contractor
who's licensed,
and then bring that to us, and then we give them the loan application at that time. They can fill it out. You know, it's I think we have to be careful that Jeff doesn't go to his buddy down in the Bay Area and say, hey, look, you know, I can get a free loan here. You know, so I charge me $6,000. It's a $600 project. You know, we're not going to go out and inspect everything. So, you know, he's got $5,400 to play with. You know, so anyway, it just, I think there's a loophole here that, you know,
free money is always
still.
Well,
it's free money.
Well, yeah, it's
money has to pay it back.
But. How come he gets a loan and I don't?
Yeah.
And that is, you've sort of described, Andy, the process that this would follow. They would go out and get the estimate. It would be attached to the application. But the risks do seem real. And some of them can be controlled by having staff take a look and have the authority to reject any application that's unreasonable on its face. But there may be some people who are dishonest and just want to go out and get free money.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, what this says is, you know, we shouldn't put this on our website so that people can download it and then go to their buddy in the Bay Area, you know, get an inflated bid and launder some money through our process.
Not that anybody want to do that, of course.
Of course not. You know.
Yeah.
Why would I want to do that?
Yeah.
We can't. That's the problem.
Well, we have to monitor this problem.
Well, I mean, you know, basically we're trusting.
Whose idea was that?
I mean, for the most part, people are going to do the right thing.
You guys
want. There might be some oddballs, but.
And I do think there needs to be an addition to the application, at least, that in the general provisions it says the water company staff and the board reserve the right to reject any application as being unreasonable for other reasons. So I do recommend that we add that to the text we have.
So if they're driving a Maserati, they might not qualify?
Well, and that's another hard part. So that touches on.
How do you judge that?
No, we're not going to. We're not
going
to do that.
You're just going about based on faith.
We're
going to
say, I certify that I have a hardship. I had a call from a lady that said, you know, my husband was going to do the work, but he, at the, you know, he's going to have an operation and he won't be able to do it.
I have that.
He won't be able to, well, yeah, he won't be able to work.
Yeah.
And so he can't do it, and so we're thinking of applying, so what is the criteria for the hardship?
Right.
I said it hasn't been, the application wasn't
ready
at the time, so I told her that. You know, but I mean, that's what Andrew and I came up with that, and the rest of everybody did too. But I think the best thing to do is have them certify it. You know, how many people are going to rely on that?
And Dave's speaking to something that we had a hard time with, and we went back and forth with, because there's sort of a spectrum of how much information you can require.
Right, right.
And what we decided is, requiring anything more than a certification requires some sort of objective standard for staff to be able to judge. And that's sort of hard to do because everybody's situation is different.
Right.
And, you know, having this money hit all at once may be really difficult for some people. It may not be such a big deal for others, but the best we could come up with is having some sort of certification and rely on people's honesty. And that's not totally out there. Some people will cheat. There's always going to be some people.
Yeah, kept me in a good living for quite some time, actually.
As a lawyer, we know that
a lack thereof.
Some people that's are going to break
two,
the rules.
That's why you have two hoes, right?
Well, matter of fact.
But in general, people, when they have to certify that they meet some requirement, in general, so long as they're able to understand it, most people are going to answer it honestly.
And those that are looking for a free ride are not going to get it. That's simple.
The other issue that we wanted to raise is just, we tried to keep staff administration of these down. It's going to, the cost is going to vary depending on how many people actually apply for the program. But we think that actually administering the program is not going to be a tremendous burden on staff, because it will mainly involve reviewing the applications and sending the agreements back and forth. That's not as true for, I'm sorry, Bob.
No, I interrupt you, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's not as true for if there are delinquencies that have to be chased.
Right.
That's when staff administration will go up. So hopefully for a lot of people that won't get past bill reminders and bugging them about delinquencies. But having to actually chase money, foreclose liens on potentially on shares, potentially on shareholder property, that's where there will be additional costs. And I think that we'll just have to take them as they come and in consultation with the board about what we do as those come up. Yeah.
How many relocations are there?
How many you think, Sharon? There's five. Shoot, I think I got the thing here.
Well, how are you defining relocation?
Well, back the front, back, yeah. Back, the rear ones.
Oh, gosh.
I got a thing here from...
Wasn't it 400 and something?
I think so.
I got a thing.
And three is at the minimum.
But it's less than 500.
Yeah, because the people with the front yard aren't, you know, my 10-foot pipeline I have to put in won't be $1,000.
$1,000?
It won't be. And that's the minor. No. It's only the rear to the front are qualified.
Okay. Well, when you look at the number of people that are going to use it, the number of people that practically will need it, it's a pretty small percentage of the overall picture. And you covered off one thing that I was curious about. Any time we use the word shareholder, we're specifically talking about those in good standing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have 559 are the back lot.
So we get 10%.
And those are the ones that will be probably going after the loan. Well, the front ones should not be over 1,000. If they are, then somebody's...
Somebody went to the Bay Area to get a price.
Well, we were, you know, we're connected, but it was 130 feet from the house, from the connection to the house. And this was how many years ago? 4 years, 5 years ago?
About 9 years ago.
About $1,300, $10 a foot, roughly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're figuring 15 now.
That was 10 years ago. Was it 10 years ago?
1950 now. Wow.
Yeah. Well, then it's easily $15 a foot now.
Right.
Yeah, that would be a bargain.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Of Andrew? Tom?
I'm good. I didn't catch a lot of that discussion. The words were breaking up again.
Probably just as well.
We've put you in charge of administering the loan.
Congratulations. Okay, anything else on the loan program?
So I will add some language in the general provisions about reserving the right to reject unreasonable loans and things. So that will be part of the final project.
So that it's based on the water company's approval of the bid. We're accepting the bid.
I think it'll be more general than that. We'll review the application and agreement.
Yeah.
But yes, the general thing that staff is going to look at will probably be the estimate.
Got it. Okay. Any other questions or comments on the loan program? New business correspondence?
None
for the board?
None for the board.
The weather station, Dave?
Bob, do we need a motion to approve the program?
No, we already did. There's 601.
Okay.
That one.
It was 6 ayes and 1 abstention. That was last meeting to move forward with the program.
It was decreed.
I think it was in the minutes.
Weather station.
I talked to our webmaster. He looked into attaching a weather site to our website, and he said that Weather Underground isn't going to be a viable option. So that one, And the other, let's see, what did he say?
Did he say why?
Other companies, no, he didn't. I don't know why. He said other companies, there are out there, but some of them are announcing end of support. So whatever, and then, in other words, he couldn't put on the ones that we would probably look at anyway, or maybe most of the people would look at, but who knows? He can put one on called Weather Atlas. It doesn't have, it has Arnold on it, I think, but not Blue Lake Springs. And if we can all, we can go ahead with that, but in my mind, it's, I kind of think most people just look at their phones or go on to the computer to see where the, what the weather is. So, I wouldn't recommend pursuing it on our website, but that's the way I feel about it.
Well, California has a excellent scientific weather website, CIMIS, C-I-M-I-S. So, I mean, there's nothing to keep somebody from putting that link on our website. And
okay, I can look into
take
that.
Take a look at it. C-I-M-I-S.
C-I-M-I-S.
Oh, it's public domain. We can use it.
Sure.
Sure.
Okay, I'll ask them.
But we looked into Weather Underground and AccuWeather and a couple others, and we couldn't get it on our website. Hmm. It was access, and we had to pay for it.
He just said it wasn't compatible.
One alternative is you can look out the window.
Yeah. Stick your hand out.
If you're a Bay Area, your access is Arnold, not Blue Lake Springs. I haven't found Blue Lake Springs on any weather carrier. And if I can go on the Blue Lake Springs Homeowner Association camera, if it's functioning, yeah. But usually it's not. I'm sure anybody will bring that up tomorrow.
Well, the only way to get information on our microclimate is to have a weather station.
Yes.
Somewhere here.
Well, we get a number. How many phone calls do we get during? People call up, oh, I know it's snowing and that sort of thing.
More for the HOA than us, but I'll bet we get, you know, a handful.
Yeah, okay.
It's more just conversation while making a payment. It's not.
Oh, I got it. Okay, item next is shareholders meeting. That's June 8th, 9 o'clock. And Paul, you're not going to be there, did I hear you say that?
Yeah, I'll be back in New York.
Walmart or, Cooperstown. Oh, I got it. That's a little family joke. Okay. Okay.
And I won't be there either.
Well, because you're going to be in Paris, France or something.
I'm going to be in Paris.
That's disgusting.
It's a rough life.
Somebody, yeah, you see that.
Someone's got to do it.
Yeah.
Do I assume everyone else will be there? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have two members going off the board. We'll call them. I don't know if they're going to attend or not, since they're not going to be a part of the board. Have the election results come in?
The election results won't be available until the end of May.
Tabulated, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The plan this year is, as we've done in past years, is that I'll welcome people and introduce each one of you, if that's still acceptable. A couple of lines about your backgrounds and where you're from and et cetera. I've found out in feedback I've gotten from prior meetings, when they hear about your backgrounds, they're intimidated, literally. And that's one reason a lot of them said they wouldn't run for the board. Not with the horsepower you already have there with you. Appreciate that. And our meeting concludes at 11.
Limited scope.
There's no CIMIS.
Oh, no, there's not. But that's the key with everybody. There's just not a lot of weather stations around, unless you're in the Bay Area. But
one thing I also do is ask Carissa to make a list of questions, the most ask questions, and those that have any legal ramifications, you go to Andrew and the rest. RSA will handle. We'll be meeting at 11 o'clock after the annual meeting in the lounge area to choose new officers and committee members. You ought to attend it, something to see.
You're not there, you get appointed.
Attendance is mandatory, otherwise you
could become
president.
Exactly. I have a question about the annual meeting.
Yes.
And I know so they're going to talk about the project, and I'm imagining the question I would be asking if I were there is, when is my house going to be done?
Right. We're already thinking about that.
Okay.
Remember last time we had the little sticky notes?
Right. Well,
they're not accurate now, and Chris has been getting calls on it. You know,
right.
I know there's delay, so when they come to my house, we will hopefully have a better, we will not hopefully, we'll have a better, we'll redo those.
My clue was the red arrow that was painted on the street, you know? I knew something was...
Well,
I want to know, you know, they're done with Moran, but when are they going to go back and put the services in, you know, or...
Right.
Or when are they going to do...
Yours is going to be in quite a while.
Right. And so I don't have to worry. And so my other question is, so let's say I get connected in October. Are we going to give people leeway to connect in case there's a ton of snow on the ground to like June of next year versus 6 months?
Aren't we giving 6 months?
Yeah. Yes, but if we have a really harsh winter,
can they
get a contractor out there when there's snow on the ground for 2 months? Are we going to hold them liable? What are we thinking, or are we just going to wait and see?
If that happens, we have to adjust for that. We can't make people, you know.
Right.
We can't have them do it if they can't do it. So we'll leave the other pipes hot longer. That was our hammer to get them to finish. We're just shutting off the water. But if something happens, we could adjust for it.
So those are the questions I thought of. Pardon me.
We're going to have all the right principles here to hopefully answer those.
Mm-hmm.
And some visuals as well.
Yeah.
We will bring the map with new post-it notes.
The contract, we started off with, we'll be doing your area and other areas during these dates.
Yeah.
And we should have put it on easy rate paper. It just doesn't, that goes away with the first rainstorm.
Right, right.
And people will be offered the opportunity, encouraged to speak to the contractor, and if you're curious about when it's going to be in your neighborhood, and please understand they have things they have to work around and work with, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll be doing that. And Mark Mazingo.
Mark Franz.
Mazingo. Isn't he Mazingo?
Mark Mazingo, yes.
Yeah, he works
for Mazingo.
Yeah, okay. He's going to be speaking on the behalf of the company. Item next are our action items. One of the first action
items. I have another new item, new business item, to just throw out there, and that is there any reason why we don't have some sort of a water discount program for directors? You know, some actual incentive other than, you know, our collective collegiality?
Just never done it before.
Probably it has not been abridged or gone after, because in the bylaws that are being currently reviewed that we've inherited, is that we are to serve without compensation. And I would bet if I asked Andrew, would that be considered compensation, he'd say yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So why not change the bylaw?
That's Andrew, and he's got a staffer somewhere that's doing that. The lucky draw. Here's the bylaws in May of 2020 and stuff. And how about if I unload it back onto you and say you send Andrew an email and ask that question?
Well, I'll just ask him here.
Yeah, you're exactly right. The bylaws do say that. So, actually, part of the discussion that we've been having is an update of the bylaws. So I did a review of the bylaws to make sure that everything that is legally required to be there is there. And they look okay from that perspective, but they are rather outdated based on how most companies do business now, and they are missing a lot of things that would be in the nice-to-have category. So we're going to review the bylaws, work up some recommended edits, and that will have to be a long-term thing because those changes are going to need to be approved by the shareholder membership. But I'm thinking that we could have a nice package of revisions ready to go for next year and do some of the work ahead of time. And maybe that will be one of the issues that we should add in.
Okay.
Yeah. So we should talk about a process for, you know, getting those issues before.
In your experience, do you know any board or water company that gives their board of directors any type of compensation?
Some public agencies do have a per diem compensation. Yes. Yeah.
CCWD pays.
They don't pay. They.
I don't know what they do, but they
do
something.
You have health and.
That's not uncommon. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
I need those.
Most public agencies do have full health and actually they have full health and medical benefits where the employees don't.
Really?
Yes.
That's pretty bad.
It varies greatly by the size of the agency. Some have none, some have significant, many have per diem that'll pay you know, travel costs for meetings and things like that. So, not uncommon.
I worked for BART and we got a $15 per diem for a meeting and parking was $22. Oh, well.
Beats a poke in the eye with a sharp
stick. I didn't go for it. Any other new business? Any other old business? Any other new business? Action items. First one up is Andy and I were tasked, actually volunteered to meet with MC Engineering. We did so. And Andy, if you want to comment.
Nope, it's done.
Yeah. We put the question right to Mark, the owner of the company. And we were distressed about that listing. It's called the appendix and number 5 or something. There seemed to be a lot of padding, and that's been old ground. We plowed through that. We're not going to do a lot of that. We put it right to him. First he reacted was, you ought to be after the contractor rather than us. And he was told, the contractor's not in the room, you are. We pursue a common goal here. All we want to know is you're going to come in on time, on budget. And he said, yes, emphatically. And it was a couple hours well spent. We told the board last meeting we would do that, and I just want to assure you that we did. Anyone have a matter for executive session? Anything for the good and order? Take a motion to adjourn.
Hey, Jim? Jim? Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Mark. I just want to make a general observation, and maybe it's trivia, maybe it's not. But when I've been up through Blue Lake Springs for the last month or so, the contractor does not do a lot of, in my opinion, putting up detour signs and diverting traffic. So there's a lot of interruptions. And so all the detour signs are only partially done. And I'm wondering if we could save quite a bit of time, of the contractor's time, and help speed up the process if somebody was to work with them on getting the detour signs up where they can bypass the roads where the construction's happening. And maybe it's because they're not familiar with the infrastructure of Blue Lake Springs, how to put up, what streets bypass, or maybe it's just lack of attention or direction, I don't know. Anybody else had the same experience?
We're working with the county. The county road department or public works has to approve the traffic control. And so
okay.
Yeah, and we have a meeting every week, and he's in there. So if he has an issue with the traffic control, then it's brought up and it's corrected by the contractor. I haven't heard a lot of complaints about it.
My thought is that we could improve the detour signage and direction of traffic to help reduce the amount of interruptions to the construction process.
Well, that's a good point because the population is going to start getting pretty big here pretty quick. So a lot of some people don't know where in the heck Meadow Drive is, or they don't know where they are. So that's something we can certainly try and improve or work on.
I think there's an opportunity there to make an improvement in the process to divert the traffic correctly, mm-hmm. and to help reduce the amount of downtime to the construction crew. And
we'll take that to the contractor.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, that's good because we are going to get a lot of people that don't know where they don't know. It's hard. It's confusing in there if you don't know. Yeah.
If you don't. GPS doesn't always work.
Oh, no, no.
If you don't have cell service, you're out of luck. So.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it may take some monitoring by your team, Dave.
Right.
Going out there and have it. Okay.
Right.
But I think there's a lot to gain from it.
Yeah, I think you're right, and we'll address that with the contractor.
Anything else come before the board? Motion to adjourn.
Motion.
So moved. Thank you.
Sorry, move. Thank
you. We're really done.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks a lot, you guys.
Thanks. Mark, thank you. Thanks.